Bobby Matos and his Afro-Latin Jazz Ensemble out of Philadelphia with All Blues. He's paying tribute in this particular tune to, of course, Miles Davis, with Davis's signature tune, All Blues, which made its debut in 1959 on Davis's album Kind of Blue. This is from Matos's 2006 album Gratitude. I always like when musicians pay tribute to other musicians who have influenced them greatly. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and I'm glad you're joining us today because we're going to be talking about matters that just seem to have fallen off the cliff. And we'll start with this idea about Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico. It still is in a state of emergency, although you'd never know that. It is still an American state, although you wouldn't know that. You don't get that sense from what's happening or coming out of the White House. You don't get that sense of what's coming out of Congress. You just don't get that sense at all. Puerto Rico is all by itself and trying, the people are trying every single day to make ends meet. I have on the line, she's become a very good friend. Her name is Elisa Yenza. And she's an activist in Puerto Rico. She has been very much involved at many levels in the advancement of people's rights and interests in Puerto Rico. And I'm glad that you could join us today, Elisa. Good to have you here with us. Okay. Elisa, ¿cómo está?
Muy bien, Eutrice.
I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad that you could join us today. I was just saying that because there is practically nothing coming out in our news media about Puerto Rico, one is likely to think that either it doesn't exist or all problems are solved and everybody's happy. Which is it?
That's not true, though. I wish it were, but it's...
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm glad that you could join us because I know you are very, very well-versed, thoroughly familiar with all these interlocking things, and so you can give us a pretty comprehensive picture of what's going on. So let's start right there. Let's start with you as an example. How are you doing as a Puerto Rican citizen today? Several months ago, it would have been automatic. You just, get up and go about your business. But that has ceased to be the way things are, isn't it?
Yes, it is, because, the COVID changed a lot of things, but if that were the only thing that we were dealing with in Puerto Rico, it wouldn't be as bad. But we've been going through several crises since 2008, 2009 with the economic crisis that the United States has, because when it rains in the United States, it pours in Puerto Rico. We're a colony. We don't make our own decisions. We have everything controlled from above. And we are not allowed to do many things that would probably be better for us because we're separate from the continent and we're surrounded by water, like Trump once said, lots and lots of water. And so when we need something, if we have to wait for it to come from Florida and something's going on in the States, economically, it's more expensive than probably getting certain things from other islands in the Caribbean. We're stuck by that. And then in 2005, 2006, we had an economic crisis that was so bad we went bankrupt. So before we even had the hurricanes, we were already dealing with a bankrupt government. They had laid off people in 2009, when this particular governor went in, he dismissed a lot of public servants. So those people were already in jeopardy. And then we have the economic crisis with the government, and we have a fiscal board that's been named by a law called PROMESA from Congress, who controls everything, including our laws. We have our elected officials are probably called more decorative than anything else. They're there, but even when they pass a law and they manage to be in accordance or an agreement with the executive branch, like the governor, this board can come and cancel any law that we've decided to make. They decide how we're going to distribute the money that the government takes from our taxes, so they can reduce budgets for essential services, which is one of the things that the PROMESA law guaranteed, that we had to have our essential services defined and budgets made separated for that before anything concerning the debt would be canceled, right? So that became an issue before the hurricanes came in September of 2017, and we still are dealing with the fact that this board will not define our essential services. They keep on cutting budgets for essential services. And, you know, the bankruptcy law was made so that people could survive when they went bankrupt. And everybody that's ever known bankruptcy court or has been there knows that you get protection for a car, for your home, for, you know, food, for certain things before you have to negotiate to pay the debt. And if there's anything left, then you pay the debt, right? Well, they're not doing that here, futures. So then we have, if it was bad enough for us to pay the debt, and then there was no money in the government to fix things like our energy grid, which it needed repairs before the hurricane, and other things that were going on. Then when we have the hurricane and all the energy grid is messed up, and the buildings are messed up, and the streets and the expressways are messed up, then we're even worse off because we need more money. Plus, people didn't have electricity, which is my case. I didn't have electricity for over 5 months in my home. So wow. You can't imagine unless you live like that. And we had people, we still have certain places that they have refused to even bother to go connect them. So we have small organizations that have been helping people and small communities do small emergency solar kit systems of 3Ks or less so that they can have something to run their refrigerator and do their thing. Because, you know, Puerto Rico is one of the highest diabetes rates in the world. So we have people that need to have a refrigerator for their insulin. It's not an option, you know. And if you live up in the mountains and the roads aren't working well and you can't get down because you can't get gasoline to get your medication and put it some other place, you're stuck. And so we had over 4,000 people die with the hurricane, and that hasn't ever been cleared up. They haven't really determined that or made a real serious investigation. So anyways, we're doing the hurricane number, and then we have earthquakes on the south of the island in January of 2020, just before the virus came into the scene. So we have half of the island going through these tremors that we didn't have before, and schools are messed up, and buildings are messed up, and offices and drugstores and everything are messed up in the south, and no money, because anything that you do with FEMA, you have to put the money and then ask for reimbursement. And they're still dragging with the FEMA money for the hurricane. And 2 years later, 3 years later, we have the earthquakes. That was it started at the end of December 2019 and beginning of 2020. We just had another strong one a couple of days ago, but nothing was really damaged. And so now, after that happens, we go into the COVID virus. And we had a severe lockdown March 15th. Before most people in the United States even had anything similar. I think California was the only one that did something at the same time we did. So they closed down everything for business. They closed down the government. Only certain things were going to be taken care of online. So a lot of businesses could come back when they finally started opening the businesses. Some of them have to operate 50%. Some companies never had an economic viability to continue, so they closed down. So it's been crazy. And then schools didn't open until this semester, and with all kinds of restrictions, and many parents don't want the kids to be vaccinated because it's still an experimental drug. So you have all kinds of issues going on in jobs and and your regular social life because of this virus, plus no money to handle a lot of things. And then a crazy, irresponsible government that is governing by executive orders from the government because there's no laws that are really implementing a lot of these things that we have to deal with. It's all government orders from the governor. So even the way we do our school and you know, the way business has to operate, restaurants either have to ask for the vaccination ID or operate at 50%, and you still have to have a negative test for the COVID if you want to sit down in a 50% capacity restaurant. If not, you have to buy the take. And so it's everything's disrupted. And, you know, in the meantime, we have a governor and his group that have decided that we have extra money from CARE, from the COVID money. So they're going to spend it on this big party that's going to be the first place where we're saying goodbye to the 2021. It's like a new year, a chain of celebrations that's going to be happening in the United States and other parts, and we're the first stop. So they're spending this millions of dollars on this event that they're going to have, the party, because they say that this is going to be a showcase for Puerto Rico so that we have more business coming here. But we can't get free COVID-19 testing so that people can go to work and go to school or go to their doctor's appointment or go anywhere that they require this for. It's like once a week in certain towns you can get a free test, but you know, they have a extra money to throw a party, you know what I mean? So everything is like upside down, plus our energy crisis has gone to levels that we were supposed to. We had this idea that the government was going to privatize our public corporation, that all it needed was money to fix the everything, right? And before the hurricane, well, they were had decided and convinced a lot of people that we need to do a public-private agreement so that somebody would come in and invest money to fix our grid and invest in modern things and towards renewable energy, which is what we finally decided was the state plan in harmony with what's going on in other places in the United States and in the world. Well, this company was formed after they won the bid. They made a corporation with two companies that got together, one from the United States and one from Canada, and they were on the job training for over a year. More than $1,300 million they got for being there. And when they entered in operation June the 1st, we've had all kinds of power outages. Instead of being fixed in 3 or 4 hours, people have been without electricity for days. You know, some people haven't had electricity for a week. And then if the water systems don't have electricity, then the water is not pumped to home, so people don't have water either. After we spoke yesterday, Utris, I tried to do some dishes, and I didn't have any water because Luma failed in providing electricity for the water plant that provides water for my neighborhood. So all San Juan, Trujillo Alto, and another sector, I can't remember the other one, didn't have any water until this morning. And we know because when the hurricanes came, we knew that people didn't have water for over a month. They brought in power plants, you know, portable power plants to get the things running again. So, and this happened in Georges in 1998, and it happened in Ugo about 20 years before that, and nothing has been done to have these water filter plants have the electricity independent of the system so that we at least have water, because you can live without electricity, you know, kind of, but you can't live without water. So you can imagine it's very difficult, and the company was going to bring better service and lower our rates. And we've had 4 rate increases in this year, and they still want to have more money paid to them. So it's a chaos right now. And we're having a march on Saturday at 5 o'clock. They have a big thing that's been promoted. And on Thursday night, I think it is, or Friday, we have an event going on with organizations around the world and the United States that are you know, helping us out and are backing us up with this. We want the contract to be canceled because these people are not better than the people we had before. They don't even know what a tropical island with a self-contained electric system is and how to work with it. And we're going crazy. You know, it's just like people are leaving the island. The young people that have a chance to work out of Puerto Rico are leaving with their children because the education system is also a mess. So we're going to become an island of older people, and there's not going to be anybody to pay taxes because they also give tax exemptions for people that move here and buy expensive homes. So, you know, it's kind of crazy, and we're stuck. We can't control anything. You know, the United States has total control over the colony. And even though Grijalva, the Congressman Grijalva, is the president of the Commission for Insular Affairs and Indigenous Affairs for Natural Resources, he has said he wants to amend the PROMESA law. If something doesn't happen soon and they don't amend it in November, we're going to federal court to have the final, some of the final agreements done to pay this debt, which is going to put, sell new bonds that are going to put us in jeopardy in less than 10 years. This is even confirmed by the board. The financial board has said that they know we're going to be in bankruptcy again in less than 10 years, and they're going ahead with this. This is insane. It's like,
well, with all that you say, I'm trying to justify what is going on in my head here. We're not hearing anything on the state side that the people of Puerto Rico are suffering tremendously. We're not getting that reaction here. There's a large Puerto Rican population in the United States. What is the reason for all of this silence? We're not hearing about the distress in Puerto Rico.
Well, I would like to say that the diaspora, which is what we call our people that are out of Puerto Rico, and it used to be that we had like 5 million here and 3 million in the United States, it's inverted by now. So there's more people living out of the country than in the country. We used to have only people that, you know, New York was basically third generation, fourth generation that had been taken away with these special programs when they couldn't handle and produce enough jobs here in the 30s and 40s. They exported workers to the farms, and they were disconnected because they were people that didn't know how to read and write. There was no easy available telephone service. So people were disconnected, and I've met people in New York and Chicago and a few other places that dream of coming to Puerto Rico again. Younger guys that are saving money when they get married, this is where they're coming to celebrate their honeymoon. And they still think they're Puerto Rican. They still feel like talking Spanish, even though they might not know how to say it correctly, right? But they're, it hasn't been able to erase the fact that they haven't been living here, hasn't been able to erase what they feel they are. And now they have a lot of people that have been living here going over there, and there's large communities, and they do feel, and they, when we had the hurricane issue and we had the earthquakes, they started sending things, but there's a lot of corruption going on the other, on the side here. So it got to a point where some of the help, you couldn't trace where it was. So there's some groups that have been forming to guarantee transparency in that sense. But, you know, when the COVID came in, then we had the issues that all the minority groups have had because they've been not treated fairly according to what a lot of people say. You know, like the Afro-American communities, the Hispanics have had it harder with this COVID thing. Not only the medical attention, but job opportunities and all kinds of other things. And so I think that part of the thing, reason why you might not be seeing a lot of it is because they're still dealing with their own issues concerning that, and then, and health issues, because there's still a lot of people getting sick. And then besides that, you know, we have a problem with media, with regular media. I mean, it's going on here. There's a lot of censorship, or they just simply ignore. So you don't read in the major things unless there's a scandal or something really, you know, important for them to promote. Like the other day, there was an article in the New York Times that said that Puerto Rico is the second place in the United States with the most vaccinated. But we know why that happens, because the pharmaceutical companies want everybody to get vaccinated. So when they have something that has to do with us that's interesting for any of the big interests that control the media in the United States, then it gets published. And it doesn't necessarily help us at all. Like the debt crisis is another thing, you know. It's really terrible. And we have a lot of people are I think we have a collective PTS thing going on here. Like, you know, it's post-traumatic syndrome. It's not post yet. It still keeps on coming, other things. So there's a lot of people that still are dealing with, they can't see their family regularly. They have health issues. They have money issues. And then you have, it's so much at the time you know, it's double for your electrical bill, and you feel that not only are they going to cut it, but they're going to make you pay interest if you delay to pay, and then they'll report you to the credit bureau, which they didn't do, and it was a public thing. So I don't think there's a lot of time left for most people to really be active and do something about this, because they're stuck emotionally. It's really terrible, and nobody seems to care. We've had suicides go up, and domestic violence, which is something that has been seen in the United States too, and I don't think they're talking that much about it either over there. But there are social issues that are going on, which are going unattended, because it seems like the people that are in power don't really care, because they're not having it happen to them.
Let's talk about Congress for a minute. You do have some elected officials in Congress who are Puerto Rican, or who are very sensitive to the needs of Puerto Rico. What are you hearing from them? What are they involved with right now that would help the island?
Well, there's only one elected official from Puerto Ricans in the United States, and she only has a vote if it doesn't change the result. It's not really a valuable vote. Territories don't have the same power if they send their commissioner residents to Congress. They're sitting there, and it's in Congress, nothing in the Senate. And she can present legislation and back up other people's legislation, and she can talk, and she can be in all the committees, but the vote doesn't really count. So that's one issue that we have to depend on Puerto Ricans and Friends of Puerto Ricans and other Hispanics and Afro-Americans that feel for us. It's always been like this. They are the people that can help us get something through, because people that have no ties with us don't get it done. So we have people like Nidia Velázquez and Luis Gutierrez, who just retired, and José Serrano, who just retired, and some of the new people like Alexandria Ocasio, and the smaller representatives, some of them have mayors and other people in the states or in counties that help with their representatives and senates and Congress to get things done. We were very lucky that Congressman Grijalva is in office, and he's in charge of the Natural Resources Committee, which is where we're under, because we're considered a natural resource for the United States. Just as the indigenous people are under that commission, we are too. And since Grijalva he's Native American descent, and I think he's also Latin American or Native Latin American. I have a feeling, and I have found out from what I've read from him, he's always been involved in communities and helping. That's how he built himself a name, and he's had actions to help people, right? So he's been very concerned about what's going on here. He's been here, and he just had a public hearing concerning the electrical company last week. And he told the people that are administering us, because they will not give any information concerning salaries or anything else to congressmen. Congressman asked them for information, and the guy said he's refusing to give over any information. They're a private company. So Grijalva sent him a real nice letter and said, you have until the 22nd of October to hand out the information we have required, or you're going to be seen in court. They've been in court here in Puerto Rico because they won't give our local legislators the information that's requested. And they have a contract to administer a public corporation. The reason why our government didn't sell it to them is because they will lose FEMA funds if they become private. So it's like a gimmick that Congress should stop it, because it's a gimmick. They have all the authority to make decisions on everything, but in paper, the corporation still is public. And they have transmission, distribution, administration, billing, and everything else. The only thing they don't do is the generation. but they do things that make generation unsuccessful. And we still have most of the power plants are ours. We have two private ones. They're the ones that decide what plant they're going to take energy from at what moment and how much they're going to take. And they don't want to spend any money, so they don't have what we used to have in the past, which was a full-time reserve. We always had more energy produced than we could, than we would need, so that if something failed or there was a momentary demand for additional power, we wouldn't have to have a shutdown. But in 2005, when we had this first company come in and control the corporation, they didn't want to spend that extra money burning something or having it, the oil warm, so that in case we had an emergency, they could turn it on right away. So this is why we're having these things where once they don't have enough power, then they're gone. And if something happens in the lines or something, which this private company controls now, the grid, then we're stuck because, you know, it used to be only one direction and now it's two. And they're saying that they want to privatize generation because then we have competition. But we're never going to have competition because all the contracts they've signed with private generators, they guarantee they're going to buy as much as the generators produce. So there's no competition because once you guarantee you're going to buy it, you have to sell, you have to buy it from them at the price that they want. Even if you can produce it or have a cheaper generator, you have to buy it from them because that's the contract. So there's going to be no kind of competition here. It's not like in the United States where you have 10 companies and you can tell your provider, I want you to buy my energy from this company. You don't have that here. So nobody's going to come here and invest in generation if they're not going to have a guarantee. They're not going to, you know, do that and then see
the
company.
It's a very rough way. Every day is a rough challenge that the people of Puerto Rico face. Is there some little indication of hope that you see coming along in terms of people organizing themselves and moving in a direction where they can at least call some shots in the middle of all of this craziness and confusion?
Well, you know that in 2019, we got rid of the governor. There was a massive public pressure put in with all kinds of manifestations, and eventually the guy resigned, and then we had a somebody that just continued practically. The person that we had in office for him, because we don't have the revocatory law here. So if the governor leaves, there's a chain of command that comes. The justice secretary took over. But, you know, she's named by him, and it's like a group of people, a team of people that they all got in office because the governor that won puts them there, right? And he had majority in House and Senate here, so it was easy for him to get these people approved. And so she was there, and a lot of things have continued. Even the people that were on that famous chat where they were talking horrible about us, including one of them, said that he dreamed of a Puerto Rico without Puerto Ricans. And that's what they're doing, because they're gentrifying us. They're making people leave. After the hurricane, a lot of the places have been bought off and reconstructed for Airbnbs. So people in these small towns that were beachfront don't have a place to go and rent again. And with the economic crisis, lots of people lost their homes and they have to rent. So they can't get rental properties at a reasonable price. And if you get something, there's no law here to protect the consumer. There's no law that obliges a person that's renting to have a certain quality in what they're offering. And if you move and you start getting water filtration or you have short circuits with your electricity, they tell you, well, if you don't like it, go. There's nothing you can do. So, and if you don't have money to pay a lawyer, then it's another issue. So it's like, it's a big chain. And this meeting that we're having on Saturday is like a hope, because people are so fed up with the electric company and the fact that the governor is governing by decree. And he left Puerto Rico. He's in Italy now. Last month, a month after the whole crisis started, he went off to Europe for another vacation. So, and now he's supposed to be in Italy with this tourism development corporation that we have. He doesn't have to go there. We have experts in tourism that should be the ones there. So he just goes. He has no, he doesn't, you know, give any kind of explanation why he's going where. Nobody, you know, and we just had, they jammed us up with this agreement to issue new bonds, which are going to put us in jeopardy last week. And then a lot of the legislators went off to some thing in the Netherlands or one of those high countries up in the north of Europe. They're at some kind of a congressman convention or something. So they were pressuring. They didn't have public hearings. They amended everything that was presented a lot of times. And they were in a hurry because next month the judge is going to decide. And if we don't have an alternative, then they're going to pick us again with something. That so they had to have this done with all the amendments, no discussion, after they made this project. And it's, you know, reducing pensions for people. It's reducing budgets. It compromises us that if something happens and we can't pay, we no longer can see our issues in local court. We're going to have to see cases in the New York court, which means that it's going to be extremely expensive for Puerto Rico's government to pay lawyers to defend us. And the other thing with the PROMESA law is, I don't know if you know this, but the person that represents us, the entity that represents the people of Puerto Rico with this debt thing, is the Junta de Control Fiscal, the oversight board. And they're not really doing anything to protect our needs. They don't even define our essential services. They're trying to get as much money as possible in the bond owners, the people that we owe money to. And we have vulture funds that took over small bonds that people were advised to sell at like 10 cents of a dollar, their retirement money with these Puerto Rican bonds. So these vultures are bought at 10 cents and they're going to be able to sell at 85 or 90 cents per dollar. And then,
Elisa, let me just interrupt for one second because we have gone beyond the time that we thought we would need, but and I'm happy about that, by the way, because it means that there's a lot to learn. Mm-hmm. Are you able to extend your time with us today so that I could open up the phones and have people call in with their questions?
Yes, I do. It would be my pleasure.
Okay. So Elisa is going to be with us, so we will use up the whole hour. That's great. At 888-874-4888. You have a question for Elisa Yenza on what's going on and what's not going on in Puerto Rico at this time. This is a time to ask the questions that you wish to ask. And we just use up the rest of our hour. 888-874-4888. You need to get on the ball, though. Don't be too lackadaisical. Let's get going. 888-874-4888. So we have a march coming up on the weekend. What is being calculated as the result? What are people banking on as the result of this march?
Well, the first thing is we want to have this contract canceled because, first of all, we do have money to fix the grid. We have our experts and the professors at the University of Puerto Rico have a whole plan that's been carefully studied where if we use 60% of our rooftops for solar panels, we can manage to produce enough energy and we can use the roofs of the buildings as the big solar farm for the public authority and not continue to use agriculture land and flat lands that can be used for other things for solar panels, because that's just going to put us in hands of these big investors that are going to make a profit again over us. So we're trying to get it canceled and get rid of the people that have been in the corporation that have messed it up so that we can start doing that, because energy controls everything. Nobody's going to come here and invest in new developments, you know, business or industries, if it's going to be that expensive to run a plant or do anything, you know. So that's the first thing. And it's an indirect way of invalidating the governor, who only won by 32%, by the way, 33% of the votes. So they call him the 33% governor. He has 67% of the people of Puerto Rico did not want him as the governor. So you can imagine where that ends us. And we're trying to see that, you know, first of all, that we get the contract canceled and that he gets his act together and starts doing things for the people. But the problem is he used to be the lawyer for the Junta de Control Fiscal, for the oversight board. And he said he was now going to be the governor and not respond to them. But he has proven that his whole executive branch is responding to what the Junta wants.
Okay, we have Tony from Orlando. You're on the air with Elisa Rienza from Puerto Rico.
Hello. Hi.
Hello.
Thanks for taking my call. Can you hear me?
Thanks for calling. Yes.
Oh, from what I'm hearing Elisa talk about, most of the problems that the island faces, besides natural disasters, are the man-made disasters, being the fact that Puerto Rico is a colony of the United States. They're under heavy restrictions of what they can and cannot do, and without any representation in the federal government. We have a congressman here. His name is Darren Soto. He introduced a bill to allow for the Puerto Ricans on the island to vote for statehood. And also, at the same time, Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez wrote an alternative bill. The two bills conflict with each other. So I don't think much progress has been made on that part. What are your thoughts about that as far as statehood for the island?
Well, those two projects, I think that Grijalva, trying to be fair, because as you say, there are they're in conflict with each other. He's kind of letting it be so that the people decide what they want. But it's very crazy here because I happen to have been an ACLU observer for the elections this year, and instead of having things fixed out in a week, from November 4th to the 15th of January, we were there recounting votes, and I can tell you that the results are not exactly the way they should have been. There's a lot of things going on, but they changed the election law like in June. So it's very conflicting the way it's done. So we can't even say for sure that the results on all the issues, including a plebiscite concerning statehood, are real, because there's a lot of things going on. And so they have total control of what's done in the elections committee right now. And as a result, they put in, according to them, we had a majority of people that wanted statehood, and they made an election in May, and we have six people that are making $120,000 a year that are supposed to be delegates for Congress, and they're getting paid with our public money, and they're not even telling us what they're doing in Washington. And it's a disgrace. It's a total disgrace. I don't think there is any kind of interest on Congress's part to let us become a state anyways. And so
I agree.
It's not a decision that we...
But now that... And I believe it has more to do with a cultural and racial issue more than anything else. It's because the people on the island keep their culture. And in the United States, the United States is an Anglo-Saxon-themed country. If you're not Anglo-Saxon-themed, you're incompatible with this system. And I believe that is the major issue is racism, for one, but also it should be highlighted, being that Puerto Rico, the island of Puerto Rico, supports the Democratic Party. And the Democratic Party right now is in power, and they have the White House, the Congress, and the Senate. And not only that, they specifically made promises to make Puerto Rico and Washington, D.C. states. And they are not making good on those promises. that needs to be called out.
You're totally correct in that. And as a matter of fact, Biden said that Puerto Rico should be treated differently. But, you know, I'm concerned that what's going to happen is what happened when Obama was in and he had the majority and he promised things. And then he was trying to get some Republicans on board. And then they had a midterm election and everything changed. And if the Democrats have ideas and they want to get them through, they better do something soon because next year there's an election, right? But
of course, and if they don't keep their promises, they're going to lose power, which is what we're seeing happening.
And then the other thing is, Grijalva has a list of amendments that he wants to do for PROMESA law, but it will all be academic if they don't do it soon. I'm going to write him about that this week, hopefully, because, you know, once the judge decides that we're going to have to pay and all the bonds are issued, there's nothing to be done with our budget. I mean, they're trying to say you don't need to assign local budgets for health because you're going to get equality from Medicaid. Well, that's one thing. You're not going to need money for roads because you have FEMA money to reconstruct. But first of all, the bonds are going to be issued for 25 years. And second of all, the United States is going through their own economic crisis. So even though they might assign money to anything, they might not be able to deposit the money and get it over here. So, I mean, I think that we should be able to be... One of the things PROMESA had was they had to have a plan for economic development so that we could become sustainable. And going back to the market to get in debt again doesn't seem to be a very wise thing for me. That's the whole purpose of them signing off this agreement, so we can go back to the market and get in debt again. It's crazy. And so I think that we need those amendments right away. We need to see that Biden's administration really gets running with what he said he wanted for Puerto Rico, regardless of if we're a state or a commonwealth or independent. There are over 3 million United States citizens here on the island that deserve to be treated, and the other territories, by the way. I think it's very unfair that other territories have the same problems, and you always listen to them. They don't have enough money assigned for their health, and they have all kinds of problems similar to us. A lot of them are islands, and they're all, you know, distant. It's like Hawaii. Hawaii has to be treated differently, and because there's water in between. You can't take a truck from California to New York. You can't go all the way out to Hawaii. So they have shipping issues and communication issues and other issues that, you know, they don't have another state that can provide electricity if they have a hurricane situation. So it's really hard.
And they have those issues. Hawaii has those issues.
We want to move on, but you could wind it up, Tony.
I just want to put one last point. Hawaii, unlike Puerto Rico, Guam, and the Virgin Islands, and I think you have Micronesia, you might have the America Samoas and a few islands in the Pacific. These U.S. territories don't have representation in Congress. They don't have representation. They have no voice. They will never be self-sufficiently run unless they're either independent from the United States or a state. As long as they're a colony, they're going to be under this bureaucracy blanket as long as it remains in that status.
All right. So well, thank you for your question.
Like
thank you for the participation today. Thank you. 888-874-4888. We're closing in on the hour. If you have a question, this is the time to call in. Jay from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hi, Jay.
I have a quick question for your guest. I'd like to know if you could speak on the container movement.
Wait a minute. Do you have a radio on at this time?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Is this better?
Yes, because you turned it off. That's good.
No, I was just speaking.
So, your question, Jay.
Yeah, my question is there a growing container movement in regards to replacing the houses that have been damaged because of the hurricane? Because it seems like those houses are better suited for that area than regular houses, because I've seen numerous.
Okay, we have to keep it short because we have to move on.
What is he called container houses?
Containers are the what are used to transport cargo.
No, that I don't think
big
that. No,
iron
I really
boxes.
I don't really think that that is a solution. We have other situations that usually cement homes hold in really good unless the roofs are not made correctly. They have wooden and aluminum shield slate roofs, or the there's too close to the coast and the water pulls them out, or they're close to a river that takes out the bottom, you know, where the house is standing on, and then the house collapses. But if the house is made correctly in cement, and the windows are appropriately, done, you usually can go by with less damage. But right now even the roofs haven't been fixed in many homes. I mean, when they had the first program, Utris, it was called Tu Hogar Renace, which is an emergency program from the STEP program under the Stanford law. We were advised, and I was an inspector for that program, that if the people had the blue tarps on their roof, we couldn't calculate repairs for their roofs. So I had to leave a lot of the houses with no, having $19,000 for reconstruction that I could have facilitated, I couldn't calculate fixing their roof if they had a tarp. And now, 4 years later, there are more than at least 10,000 homes with blue tarps on, which means every time it rains, you get everything inside your house is at risk, plus the security issues. I mean, I don't even want to say it, but you can imagine if you just have a soft blue tarp on the roof and somebody wants to get in to do whatever, it's very easy, right? So that's one issue. And we have another situation because they don't want us to fix homes that with public funds that are in areas that they consider dangerous. But we have areas that had never flooded before that flooded this time. And, you know, they've been there for 40, 50, 70 years. And they won't fix that, but they will allow permits for private companies like hotels to take over the beachfront where people have lived all their life. And they won't fix the homes for them, but they will allow big hotels to buy that terrain for peanuts and construct right on the waterfront again. So these are things that have to be addressed because it's, first of all, it's not fair. Second of all, when a big construction thing gets messed up, the insurance pay a fortune. And then we had issues like the pot to cover damages was gone in a lot of companies because the big companies got in first with their lawyers and got their money. And then the smaller people didn't have anything left to ask to get their damages covered for. So it's just a big chain of things. And you know how it is. Big interests always control decisions. And this has to change. I mean, there are people that are willing to work and invest, and they're not being listened to. People that are willing to go to public hearings, sit down at tables, what they call stakeholders in the United States. We're usually ignored. We might be invited to one meeting and they have somebody there to cover because there's a, you know, federal requisite that there's somebody from every side of life sitting at the table, but they're not really included in daily decisions or anything. And this is a problem because you have people that are making decisions, even that fiscal board, nobody really lives here on the island. So what they do here and mess it up, we have a woman from Ukraine who's making $650,000, plus she gets paid a monthly travel expense to go to Ukraine to see her family and all kinds of other things. She has like six bodyguards that we have to pay. And she's making decisions for us. She's never lived here before. She doesn't know what it is to live here. She doesn't care if we lose our community schools or our community clinics or anything else. And she's not going to be messed up by her decisions because she can leave. And nothing will happen to her life. But we really need, and the public people that we have in office, a lot of them are selling off to this other thing. It's like really crazy because we changed the representative, the elected officials, and they're in doing things that nobody expected. Let's put it that way. And we feel that there's some corruption, heavy corruption, still going on. And it's, if we don't get help from the federal government to get these people out of office with very strict punishment, because, you know, when you have this woman that just accepted that she was guilty, and she got a 6-month thing with probation and one other year that she has to stay home, and she messed up the education department, and you know, she's only have to pay $22,000 back. I mean, if we don't have people pay for what they're doing, then we're never going to get rid of corruption. And that doesn't only have to do with here in Puerto Rico. This is something that's happening all over the world, and in particular in the United States. And I think we really have to start, you know, putting pressure and have people being accountable for what they do. Everything should be open. These people they're making money on the side. They're involved in things that they cover up with corporate names, and you know, you give a private contract, which is what's going on here, to a private company, and we can't go in and see who they're hiring. We can't see who they're subcontracting. So we can't see if the people, the family members of the people in office that are handing over this contract, have all their family working for the company, which is exactly what's happening with Luma, by the way. We have people that are 3 family members from the secretary of government, which is the second hand, you know, the second person in charge in the executive branch. She has 3 family members working with the new private corporation that runs the energy authority now. So she, you know, she protects what they're doing because her family members are getting high pay for what they're, for their job there. So nepotism is no longer.
We've run out of time. Mm-hmm. We have to return to the subject because it is so important and it is so vast. We have to return to this subject soon enough. But I want to thank you for allowing us to impinge on your time today, apart from the time you agreed to spend with us. And we'll be doing some more talking very soon. Thanks so much for being with us today.
And thank you. I will be, if anybody wants to see some things that are going to be happening, they can go into Facebook in Puerto Rico Protests Promesa. And that's a Facebook profile where you can see pictures and news and information concerning what's going on as far as the things that we are trying to change from the communities up. So,
okay. Thank you. Well, that does it for us. Until tomorrow, then. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.